What's happening, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of Squack Talk, the show where we cover the squack inside and out. I'm your host, Charles Wells, coming at you on this Sunday, and we are going to take a little time and recap each team's 2021 spring season before we hop into our 12-team preview, which will be right around the corner because we are less than 100 days from the start of the fall season, so not a lot of time to waste. And not a lot of time in this off season. So that's one of the, you know, positive and negative benefits of the spring season is that there hasn't been much of an off season. For the players, it's not that good of a deal. They don't have that long to rest, but those guys are young, so they probably can shake back a little bit quicker than some of us can. So before we do that, I always like to start off with my socials, facebook.com/squacktalk. Twitter.com/SwagTalk76, Instagram.com/SwagTalk, and SwagTalk76@gmail.com/SwagTalkShow, and you can check that out if you haven't already. Why don't you go ahead and subscribe to that page. And like all the videos, share them when you get the opportunity, and hit the notification bell on there so you can be alerted to any videos that I upload. I'm going to be doing videos at least twice a week, and any other new and breaking news, a video will most likely be made at that time. So if you hit the notification bell, you'll be alerted to anything that I upload, so you won't be caught by surprise when I put out any new content. So with all that out of the way, we're going to start our season recaps with the new 2021 Swag Champs. And it works out that way. We're going alphabetically, but hey, Alabama A&M comes first in line and also finished first in the standings. So the Bulldogs this year had a very, very interesting season. They had the kind of championship if you took a narrative form. Their season didn't get off to the best start. Alcorn opted out a week or two, maybe 2 weeks before the season. So they started their season off with a 2-0 forfeit over Alcorn. Then they were set to play Mississippi Valley on March 6th. That game got postponed because of COVID issues at Valley. So they hurried up and they rescheduled. They scheduled a game with South Carolina State on March 6th, and they had to go to Orangeburg, and they beat South Carolina State 31-7. Really good game for them. Defense looked good. Offense was good. Glass did throw three interceptions, but they still managed to put 31 points on the board. They came back for a bye week on March 13th, which was dated by a week by the league because that was the same weekend of the SWAC basketball tournament. So the next game was scheduled for March 20th against Prairie View, but that game got postponed because Prairie View had COVID issues. So they didn't have a game that week. March 27th, they were scheduled to play Grambling. Grambling had COVID issues. So Grambling outright canceled that game. And that was A&M's supposed to be second home game of the season, and they didn't get to play it because the Alcorn game was a home game, and that game got canceled due to Alcorn opting out of the season. So no home games for Alabama A&M up to this point, and no games period since March 6th. April 3rd was the makeup date for Prairie View and Alabama A&M. Well, Prairie View still had COVID issues, and so that game got postponed again. April 10th, they finally had the opportunity to play again. Almost a month later, they finally had the opportunity to play, and they went to Jackson to take on Jackson State, and they won that game 52-43 in a game that was broadcast on ESPN. So coming off of a month layoff, basically, they were able to have a tremendous offensive showing. Defense didn't look that great, but they got the stops that they needed in the crucial points of the game to get the W. April 17th, they went to Birmingham to play Alabama State in the Magic City Classic, and they won that game 38-14. in a game where the Bulldogs started off slow in the first half. Alabama State played well in the first half. Their starting quarterback got injured, and they couldn't keep up the pace as Alabama A&M and Akil Glass were able to kind of hit the throttle in the second half and pull away for that W. And that game basically gave them the East Division because they had beat Jackson State and they had beat Alabama State. So they were undefeated at that point. And they couldn't be caught because they obviously had wins over the other two teams who were in a position to catch them. So April 24th, they had a game against Valley. That game was canceled. So that gave them a week off. And then May 1st, they played Arkansas Pine Bluff in the SWAC Championship and won that game 40-33. So they ended up playing five games with the SWAC Championship game. And they only played basically back-to-back games once, and that was April 10th and April 17th. And like I said, with so many delays and, you know, postponements, this team had to stay sharp because they just had to really follow everything that teams preach with the protocols and being able to maintain their discipline and stay safe with COVID. So the start of the season obviously was Akil Glass, the quarterback. He made a big name for himself in this season, having two games televised nationally, really put him. I mean, he was already on the map in SWAC first, but outside of the SWAC world, games against Alabama State and Jackson State, he really put on a show, and his name really started to blossom. And now he's being looked at as an NFL candidate, which I'm glad people are seeing the light, because I've always felt like he was the best quarterback in the league. And that's something that I'm glad that other people get to see now. So he's heading into the fall with a higher profile. Honestly, every game he played this season was great. He only threw, I think, four interceptions on the season. So three of them came in the first game. But I thought he played very well during the season. And he carried himself well. The team as a whole really looked sharp. You know, like I said, they had some issues with the defense against Jackson State, but for the most part, they played fairly well and adapted to everything that was going on. And they proved themselves to be the survivors. And that's what it took for this kind of season, was to be a survivor. And they put up a lot of good numbers. On the season, they were second in the league in scoring at 36.5 points per game. They scored 146 total points. They were fourth in the league in scoring defense. They allowed 23.5 points, 94 total points. They scored 21 total touchdowns. They allowed 14 total touchdowns as a defense. They scored 21 touchdowns as an offense. They led the league in total offense at 457 yards per game. They averaged 6.3 yards per play. They finished fourth in the league in total defense, 330 yards per game, 0.7 yards per play. They were eighth in rushing offense at 118 yards per game. They averaged 3.6 yards per rush. They had five touchdowns. Defensively, they finished fifth in rushing defense. They allowed 143.5 yards per game and five total rushing touchdowns. Passing offense, they were first with 338 yards per game, 16 touchdowns, and four interceptions, 57% completion percentage for the passing game, 91-159. Defensively, they were fourth in the league in passing defense, allowing 198.8 yards per game. They allowed seven touchdowns and had five interceptions. 56.8% completion for the opponent, 79-139. Offensive passing efficiency, they led the league with a passing efficiency rating of 157. defensively, they were second in passing efficiency, allowing an efficiency rating of 114.3. They were fifth in the league in kickoff returns, averaging 19.2 yards per return, and fifth in the league in punt returns, averaging 11 yards per return. Kickoffs, they averaged a net average of 28.9 yards per kick. They were eighth in the league in that. They averaged 45.6 yards per kickoff. They did. They had one touchback. Field goals, they were 4-for-4 on the season for 100%. Extra points, they were 19-of-20 for 95%. Good for 7th in the league. Punting, they were 4th in the league with an average of 37.9 yards per punt and a net punt average of 33.9. They allowed 6 sacks as an offense, and they had, which led the league, which tied for 1st in the league. They were 7th in the league in sacks as a defense, also with 6, and they were 4th in the league in interceptions with 5. They led the league in first downs with 105 total, good for 26.3 first downs per game. Their opponents had 78 first downs, good for 5th in the league, at an average of 19.5 first downs per game. They were 4th in the league in third down conversions at 19-of-48 for 39.6%. Defensively, they were 8th in the league in third down conversions, 27-of-61 for 44.3%. Fourth downs, they were 5th in the league at 2-of-4 for 50%. And they allowed a fourth down conversion rate of 1-for-4 on defense. That was 3rd in the league for 25%. The Bulldogs were 8th in the league in penalties. They had 30 penalties for 322 yards, good for 80.5 yards per game. Opponent penalties, they led the league with 36 penalties for 386 yards, 96.5 yards per game for penalties for the opponent. Average time of possession for the Bulldogs, they were 4th at 30 minutes and 26 seconds. So as you can see, offensively, they were at the top of the league in pretty much everything. Defensively, they were a middle-of-the-pack kind of team. They didn't have a great third-down conversion rate as an offense because they threw the ball so much. They didn't run the ball that much. If they ended up in a third-down convert, in a third and long, sometimes they struggle to pick those up because of the fact that they couldn't always consistently get, good yardage rushing. They put them in shorter yardage conversion situations. And when obviously when you throw the ball like they do, you're gonna have drive that stall a little bit more than teams that run the ball unless they get behind the chain. So they that was probably their one weakness on offense. But in the running game, it was serviceable. Obviously they didn't run the ball a lot. Garrett Qualls was the leading rusher. He had 76 carries for 318 yards. Good for 4.2 yards per carry. 4 touchdowns. He had a longer 23 on the season. He averaged 79.5 yards per game. Cameron Young was 2nd with 8 carries for 61 yards, 7.6 yards per carry. No touchdowns. His long run was 30, which was the longest run of the season for them. 15.2 yards per game rushing for Mr. Young. Akil Glass, 22 carries for 36 yards, 1.6 yards per carry. He did have one touchdown. He had a long run of 23 on the season, good for 9 yards per game. Quintarius Daniel, 5 carries for 31 yards, 6.2 yards per carry. No touchdowns. His long was 13, 10.3 yards per game. Troy Lindavy, he had 1 carry for 16 yards, 4 yards per game. And you know, they had a ton of guys that had one carry on the season. So, but Garrett Qualls was basically the running attack. He was, other than Glass, he was the only person with double digit carries. And that's kind of similar to what they did last year with Jordan Bentley, how he had the bulk of the carries, and nobody else really had many. So when they have one guy that they lean on, and they lean on him pretty hard to get things done. Defensively, their longest run on the season was 54 yards, and that came against Jackson State. Passing, Akil Glass was 9-1 of 158. 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 57% completion, 1,355 yards. His longest pass was 65 yards, and he averaged 338.7 yards per game. Justin Cannon was 0-1 on the season, no interceptions. And like I said, Glass was sacked 6 times on the season. Receiving, Zabrian Moore, 13 catches, 363 yards. 27.9 yards per catch, 5 touchdowns, long of 61, 90.7 yards per game. He was one of the big play guys, obviously. His tag team partner, Abdul Fatai Ibrahim, 18 catches, 277 yards, 15.3 yards per catch, 3 touchdowns. His long was 35. He averaged 92.3 yards per game. Odu Hilaire was the third guy, but he actually was second on the team in catches. He had 17 catches for 233 yards, 13.7 yards per catch, 4 touchdowns, 65 yards was his long, 58.2 yards per game. Brian Jenkins Jr., 11 catches, 118 yards, 10.7 yards per catch, 1 touchdown. His long was 39.3 yards per game. Garrett Qualls, 8 catches, 92 yards, 11.5 yards per catch, 1 touchdown, long of 43, 23 yards per game. Anthony Howard, 4 catches, 46 yards, 11.5 yards per catch, 2 touchdowns. His long was 24, 11.5 yards per game. Terrell Gardner, 4 catches, 40 yards, 10 yards per catch. 15 yards was his long, 13.3 yards per game. Cameron Young, 2 catches, 21 yards, 10.5 yards per catch. Long of 17, 5.2 yards per game. Keon Wakefield, 2 catches, 19 yards, 9.5 yards per catch. No touchdowns, 18 yards was his long, 6.3 yards per game. And he caught one body against Alabama State. I talk about that move he put on that defensive back against Alabama State forever. He just really broke that dude down. That's something that when I see his name, I think of that play all the time. It was just a tremendous play. And Kendrick Johnson caught 2 passes for 46 yards, 23 yards per catch, 35 yards with his long, 46 yards per game. And like I said, 65 yards was the longest for Alabama A&M. The longest pass play for their opponents was 39 yards. So they did a good job of not allowing a lot of explosive plays on defense. And that kept them in, you know, that kept them in a lot of situations because they really don't mind being in a shootout. And they, you know, they were able to get the stops that they needed this year. Last year, they did a much better job against the run this season than they did in 2019. And I think that was one of the things that made their team click a little bit better on defense because they weren't getting gashed on the ground per se like they had been. So they didn't really allow so many time-consuming drives to slow their offense down. Marcus Cuccini was the leading tackler. He had 20 tackles. He also, with 20 tackles, was Armoni Holloway. That's a name I prop up all the time. He's probably the second or third guy that I always talk about to play for Alabama A&M. Kid's always around the ball. You're never gonna not hear his name when you cover Alabama A&M. His name gonna always pop up. Amari Holloway, his brother, had 16 tackles on the season. Tralik Colefield, 14. Quintravis Kelly, another name that you can hear a lot. He had 13 tackles. Trenton McGee, 12. Hayden Gilford, Denzel Davis, 11. Hayden Gilford, 9. Jamarion Green, 8. Selmar Russell, 8. Eli Jackson, 7. Xavier Billingsley and was 6. Jonathan Struggs was 7. Joseph Narcisse, 6. Caleb Riley, 6. Dami Adejunko, 5. Breon Austin, 4. Demetrius Biambi, 4. DeMarco Gibson, 4. Jabron McNeil, 4. Richard Callaway, 3. AJ Harris, 3. YT Huggins, 3. Ibrahim, 3 tackles. Osman Savage, 3 tackles. Tackles for loss. Cushini, 7.5. Armani Holloway, 4. Kelly, 3. Russell, 2.5. Jackson, 2. Amari Holloway, 1. Cofield, 1. Guilford, 1. Green, 1. Billingsley, 1. McGee, 1. Narcisse, Austin, Biambi, and Davis each had a half a tackle for loss apiece. The Bulldogs had 28 tackles for loss on the season. The opponents also had 28 tackles for loss. Sacks, Cushini, 7. Kelly, 1. Jackson, 1. Amari Holloway with 1. And McKenzie had 1 sack each. Interceptions, Kelly had 3, McGee 1, and Green 1. So, as you can see, defensively, A&M's defense really came a long way from 2011. They did a good job of getting stops when they needed them. They just really stepped up to the plate this season, and I thought they played very well considering everything that they went through as a team. You know, it's easy for a team to lose focus when you don't know when you're going to play, and every week you get ready for a game and then that game doesn't happen. It's really easy for a team to kind of choose to just not so much pack it in, but maybe not be as disciplined as they need to. And I think that's one of the things that doesn't get enough credit for A&M is that they were an extremely disciplined team. They were one of only a few teams in the league who didn't have a game postponed because of their COVID issues. So they, whatever they did as a program, they did it very well to keep their guys safe and also keeping them active and keeping them ready to play, because that, you know, that's something that can easily be lost or can just be chalked up to, oh, this is a COVID season. We're not going to really worry about if the games don't happen. We're not going to worry about keeping the guys in control. So that Coach Maynard and his staff and basically their athletic department period deserves a whole heap of praise, because they, you know, they did a good job of staying focused, staying positive, and just not letting the fact that every week they was ready to play and they couldn't get them down, because that's something easy that could happen, is to get down on yourself and you know, hate the situation and just not play hard because you know you're just not happy with the way this stuff is going down. So A&M, like I said in the beginning, they kind of, if you wrote this as a movie, this kind of had to be a season that ended in a championship. It had to crash and burn, and they did a good job of staying focused and making that championship, and not just making it, but winning it, and winning their first championship since 2006. So, tremendous season. And you know, I know some people are gonna look at this season as an asterisk type of deal, but when you go through what they had to go through to make it to this point, you definitely earn that championship on and off the field. And any championship season that you have is going to have some kind of adversity on the field and off of it. You know, very few teams just coast to a championship, no matter the length of the season. Nobody really just coast through a championship with no kind of adversity, you know, an injury or, you know, a game that they had to kind of survive, or, you know, something happened off the field. You know, those kind of things happen, and teams that win championships are the kind of teams that can traverse that terrain and make it through to the other side. And this was a very good season for them. And now they're going to come into this fall in a new version of the SWAC with 12 teams and a 16 divisions. And now they're going to have a huge bullseye on their back. So they're going to have to be able to play as the hunted instead of the hunter. And they are in a division that is going to be super, super tough. I'll talk about that in my season previews, but this East Division is definitely going to be no joke. So if they make it back to the SWAC Championship, then they will have earned that repeat on their crown. So again, A&M finished 5-0 on the season, SWAC champs, HBCU national champs on the season, and we're going to see what they do in the fall. So that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We'll be back on next Sunday as we review the Alabama State spring season. And we'll do these team-by-team reviews and then we'll start our 12-team fall 2021 previews. So until next Sunday, I'm your boy Charles Wells signing out, and I will holler at you then. Also, we have a YouTube video going up today. Also going to cover the Alabama A&M spring season, so check that out when you get a chance. We out.